Lean Leadership Podcast, episode 61.
This is the Lean Leadership Podcast. Equip yourself with the tools for success in your team's lean journey by learning from the world's top lean professionals. Listen at the risk of improving with your host, Chris Burnham.
Today's guest is Allison Greco. Allison is the founder of Continuous Improvement International, whose mission is to cultivate a passion for continuous improvement and drive the adoption of continuous improvement culture as the key to organizational success. They provide a fresh, modern professional society for continuous improvers and process improvers. They provide support to individuals and teams through member services and their virtual program office. Allison is a professional engineer by trade and got her start with Lean while working on the railroad, and has worked with a variety of industries including energy and utilities and the federal government. She is a certified Six Sigma Black Belt and a proud Oklahoma Sooner, where she earned both her BS in industrial engineering and her MBA. Here's our guest, Allison Greco. Well, welcome, Allison. We briefly touched on who you were in the intro, but can you tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, and how lean and continuous improvement is a part of your life?
I'm Allison Greco from Continuous Improvement International. Lean and continuous improvement are really a part of my entire life. So professionally, I run the CII DM Good membership and provide consulting services to service-based organizations. But it's also really a part of my life, everything from making my kids run checklists in the morning to color-coded calendars to keep my family straight. It's just how we operate at the Greco House.
Good stuff. Well, I'm a parent as well. In fact, today, as we're interviewing this, this is my son's 17th birthday. So I understand that if you are not organized, that is a choice, and it affects you when it comes to managing a household with kids. So I'm glad that you use some of the principles at home. I hope we can get into that in the podcast.
Absolutely. But
before we get started, we always ask for our guests to share with us a quote or a mantra from a favorite lean leader that they have. So can you tell us what your quote is and why you chose it?
My absolute favorite quote is, "Continuous improvement is better than delayed perfection." And it's actually a quote by Mark Twain, not necessarily your typical lean leader, but I often see that people in these jobs we're perfectionists. We want to get it right. But a lot of times we need to remind ourselves that incremental improvement is really going to get us towards the end goal. So take a step today, take another step tomorrow, maybe take a leap the next day. And instead of chasing perfection, just chase that improvement.
Great quote. That applies so much. And I love that you picked a Mark Twain quote and you didn't go in the professional realm. You went, and we were talking about authors beforehand, and Mark Twain is absolutely one of my favorite authors. I am in Memphis. I am right here on the Mississippi River. Where are you today, Allison?
I am in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Okay, good deal. Well, one of my goals for this podcast is to help other lean leaders resonate with your experiences. So can you share with us kind of how you the story about how you chose this profession that you've undertaken?
Actually, the profession chose me. So while my background is industrial engineering, I have a master's in business, I always assumed that I was going to go into quality and not necessarily the lean side of the world. But I had an awesome opportunity to join the railroad and had a summer internship with BNSF Railway that really introduced me to the basics of Kaizen events and the 8 forms of waste, and my eyes were opened and really became very enthusiastic about what continuous improvement can do for a company. I loved that before and after the improvement that we can make for a company and for the people. So I was hooked.
Well, that's an interesting start. A lot of people have stories about their journey. Tell me about working at the railroad and lean and continuous improvement. Most of us in our mind think, well, they put freight on a train over here and they take it off over there. But there's a lot of different steps that go in between, right?
Oh, my goodness. Yes. It was one of the most incredible experiences. And we could probably talk for hours about the railroad. But part of my training was to really learn the business. So I spent about 3 months learning the ins and outs of the railroad business. towards the end of my training, they actually dropped me off by myself with a small bag at the Kansas City rail yard and said, you are going to ride the rails to LA, figure out how you're going to get there. Here's some basic requirements. When you get to LA, you can fly home. And it was a test to see, did we actually learn how the railroad system works and can we navigate the system and then learn operations along the way? So no joke. I was dropped off at the Kansas City rail yard and made my way hopping freight trains all the way to LA. It took me about a week to get there.
That's super cool. That's a great story about having to understand not only how the system worked, but along the way you had to interact with people and you had to explain why you were there and what you were doing and you had to build trust. And I think that's such a great metaphor for lean and continuous improvement.
Oh, absolutely. And so most people think that I actually hopped a freight train and I'm like hanging on the back on the ladder. But you're exactly right. I had to go up to strangers, the engineers and the conductors, and spent hours with them on their train, learning about the business and building their trust. But it was really like Gemba walking at its finest. And there's no better way to see how things actually operate than to go spend the week in doing what I got to do.
Now, I'm a little worried. Are there any lost interns that didn't pay attention in class that are still somewhere missing on a rail yard, like trying to figure out how to get home?
Yeah, probably. But maybe that's a part of the screening process, right? If you can't come back, then maybe yeah. Out in LA, maybe they pursue a different career.
Well, that's great. A great experience. Great story. That's really unique for the podcast. That's the first I started at the railroad story with lean and continuous improvement. Can you share, you've had a lot of success, I imagine, but all of us experience some sort of setback, learning opportunity, failure, whatever you want to call it, in our lean and continuous improvement journey. What was your mistake or your pitfall moment? And what did you learn that you can share with our listeners?
Oh my goodness, just one. Well, I think the biggest theme in my failures is not bringing together the people who are doing the work and not bringing enough of the right people into the decision-making process. So later on in my railroad career, I was helping to implement a new software system, and I was set out to go train at our pilot location. I did the training. My audience was silent. They hated it. They absolutely hated what I was saying, what I was asking them to do. And I left at the end of the day feeling defeated, going, oh my goodness, I'm going to lose my job. They hate this. It's not going to work. And so the next day I went back and went to my audience who was using the software and said, okay, just show me what you do today. Walk me through your process. Okay, now tell me, why can't you do why can't you do your job with the new tool? And we were able to walk through step by step what was going on, helped me hear their perspective, and I was able to change my messaging, change my approach so that I could show them how this tool actually better met their needs. But I made the mistake of not doing that in the first place. So jumping to a new tool, jumping to training instead of really listening and learning first.
That's such a powerful lesson. I think with lean and continuous improvement, some of the mistakes that I've made is jumping directly into tools and features and benefits versus like what you did is understanding, like, what are you doing today? What are you struggling with? And then applying the appropriate tool or the appropriate messaging or sometimes saying, you know what, I can't help you. You guys are great. And leaving them alone. I think that's something that all of us go through with lean and continuous improvement. What I love about that story is you bombed, like you had a bad day. Like all of us are going to have a bad day. But you came back the next day and you changed your behavior and you connected with people in order to be able to help them solve the problems that they were being frustrated with.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's connecting with people. And that's probably the key to making continuous improvement successful across the board is connecting with people and truly understanding where they're coming from and how their work operates.
System problems require a system solution. It's not the people. It's usually the process that they're operating in. So, well, that you shared with us a moment where you bombed, but there had to be a moment where it was like, this is the work that I'm supposed to do. Like aha moment, like, you know, fireworks go off, eureka. What was that moment for you in your continuous improvement journey so far?
Yes. And when I worked in the utilities, we really embraced the GE workout style of events. So it's a little bit different than a Kaizen event where we work on complex problems, complex processes, typically over the course of 3 or 4 days. And we had gathered all those stakeholders to solve a problem. And I let them go. I let them work into their teams and gave them a lot of flexibility. And about halfway through, they came over to me and they go, Allison, I didn't do what you asked us to do. Oh, really? No, you told us to fix the process, but we decided it's actually the roles and responsibilities that are a problem. So we created a whole new set of roles and responsibilities as well as an org structure. And I go, what? What did you do? Oh my goodness, I called in our sponsor. And it was this amazing moment of when we gave our employees the opportunity to solve the problem, they came up with an even better solution for us and opened our eyes into the real problem. The problem wasn't actually the process. The problem was roles and responsibilities. And it launched a whole major shift in how we did our operations because we had this realization that we had to think about this completely differently. And it was absolutely incredible that they came up with it. They proposed it. Our sponsor got on board and ended up with a far, far better solution than we ever thought we were going to achieve.
That makes sense, though, because if you think about it, people are a critical input to a process. And if you have bad inputs, you get bad outputs. But if you have the inputs aligned properly, then as they flow through the process, you tend to get better results. So the people that were doing the work with you, did they have any experience with lean or continuous improvement, or were they just people that were there to solve a problem or talk about what they were frustrated with?
So we had a few people that had some training, some internal company training, but maybe a handful of days. And most of them were just subject matter experts who, like you said, they just wanted to solve the problem. So we set up the environment for them. We created this environment where they were free to share, and they came up with a solution.
That's awesome. I love how you talk about setting up the environment, creating an environment. Sometimes we call it psychological safety, a safe place for people to share their ideas. But you change the environment to get better results. And you didn't have this group of like black belts and, you know, highly trained people. It was the subject matter experts, the people that truly are the experts in the organization, or the people that do the work every day. And they know what's right and they know what's wrong. And you gave them the latitude and freedom to be able to work through that.
Yeah, absolutely. And psychological safety has come up a lot recently, especially in this environment where so many people are working remotely. We don't have a strong of sense of psychological safety where we feel like we can share without hesitation or without fear of reprisal. So I think that's becoming an increasing part of the continuous improver's job is to create that environment and to help the organization get to that place where they have a culture where people feel like they can share without fear.
I saw a really great podcast recently with Daniel Pink, and he talks about quit asking for advice, instead ask for feedback. Quit asking for feedback, instead ask for advice. And when he was talking about that, it was nobody likes to give feedback, but when you give advice, you're helpful. So instead of saying, hey, can you give me some feedback on my solution or my insight, can you give me your advice on where I'm at? It's just a different thing. It's a small mental shift in how we think about things, but it makes a big difference in the way that we communicate with one another.
I love that.
Yeah. I'll send you the link to that after we get done here. But well, you've had a lot of great experiences, obviously built a successful business on the principles here with lean and continuous improvement. I imagine there's a lean or continuous improvement pet peeve or something you frequently see being applied or done wrong. Is there?
It is interesting. A couple of months ago, I posted on LinkedIn about about the most annoying jargon that people use at work. And that post was extremely popular. It exploded with frustrating jargon that we used. And I think as continuous improvers, we tend to use a lot of jargon. We want to show people that we're very knowledgeable and we're very competent. So we tend to use a lot of tech jargon. But I think if we can strip away that language and just use common language, we can relate to people a lot more readily, a lot more easily, especially if you're working in a company where you have a lot of field workers and there's kind of this division between people who work in the office versus the field. Strip away the jargon, use that relatable language so that you can really connect with people and the way they do work. So one of my pet peeves is definitely overuse of jargon.
Well, language is a cultural enabler. I imagine in your consulting work, when you sit down with a client, you begin an engagement, you ask questions about what their language is or what words do they use so that you can relate to them when you're trying to help them solve their problems. Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the railroad, this came up recently. When I started with the railroad, they handed me a book of literal railroad jargon and terminology so that we could speak the language. Really interesting. But yes, every company has their own language and their own pet peeves about language. So you do have to learn how to speak with people.
I worked for a large financial services provider. And I think on day three, they handed me 4 single space sheets with all the acronyms that they used. And even still in meetings, even though I had that sheet, someone would spit out an acronym, someone else would spit out an acronym. And then as a facilitator, about 2-3 minutes into it, right? Wait, time out. When you use that, what do you think it means? Well, I think it means this. What do you think it means? Totally different answer. So I love that, being able to speak in plain language without acronyms or without abbreviations or weird jargon tools just makes communicating with one another and connecting with one another a lot easier.
Here's a fun fact. I once spent an entire hour-long meeting debating the definition of report. What is a report?
Wow. Maybe we should have had that back on the pitfall moment back in the earlier question. That had to be a little bit of challenging. But I think that's a good point. That happens in this work. Like, you can't move forward until you get clarity and alignment. And sometimes that means debating on what a report is.
It does. And once we move past that meeting, we had several weeks of previous meetings where we were all confused. We weren't getting it anywhere. But once we level set, we were able to get to solutions a lot faster after that happened. So I complain about the hour, but it was actually an hour well spent.
Great story. Allison, what do you consider the most important thing that you've learned in your career journey so far?
One of the most important things I've learned is agility. If you look at my resume, it's very interesting. It almost looks haphazard. And that's because my husband was an Air Force pilot for the first about 12 years of my career. So my career journey was not intentional. It was going where the Air Force moved us, where my husband was stationed at the time, taking advantage of opportunities where I could find them. So I had to be a lot more flexible in finding those opportunities and making the most of them. And then within those jobs, again, being really flexible, and I tend to be a very type A person. I want to be in control, but especially in continuous improvement, you have to let other people take the lead sometimes. So being flexible, showing that agility, listening to people and being willing to flex when things may not go according to plan or the way that you think they're going to go, then listening, writing it out, because sometimes those unexpected things turn out to be great opportunities.
Humility sounds like one of the qualities that I had there. Not having to be in control, not having to have your voice heard in a way that was louder or drowned out the other voices, but just being humble about what the next step was and being open to learning, I imagine, had to be something you had to go through as well.
Yeah, I'd always open to learning. So now in my career, I've worked in railroad, utilities, federal government, oil and gas, trucking, a wide variety of industries. And while it's a major challenge, I really do love learning how each business functions. At the core, they're all the same, but each business has some nuances that are fun to get to know.
In my career journey, I've had a few stops, and every stop along the way, they said, well, whatever you've learned, we're completely different here. And you said, wait, stop, right? Yeah, I know you'd like to think that you're different, but you still have a process that creates value. You have people that are engaged in that process, and you've got challenges for getting that to come through. That's what I do. Like, it doesn't matter what the widget or the process or the output is. It's still people engaging with one another to create value for their customer. And that's that people are the piece to it, right? But I think that in my career, the people that have said, oh, we're totally different, they're usually they're the ones that want to say that they're different so that they think that you can't help them.
Yep, yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the things I really love about this profession. With continuous improvement, we have a set of tools, and we're equipped with those tools. We know how and where to use them, but they can be applied to a million different situations. So there's common tools that can be applied in a lot of different scenarios. So even though I may not know how trucking works, I can use my tools to help guide the conversation.
That's the reason we have lean in manufacturing, lean in government, lean in healthcare, lean in oil and gas, lean in transportation. It's there's some commonality there that doesn't pigeonhole this thing that we do with continuous improvement into one specific industry or discipline.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, what piece of advice would you give to someone who's just starting out with lean or continuous improvement?
So the best piece of advice for someone who is just starting out is to listen and spend more time listening and asking questions than you do dispensing advice. I actually, even now, spend more time asking questions than I do dispensing advice, because often just that line of questioning helps me learn, but also helps the person I'm trying to help solve their own problems. So spending that time listening. And then the second most important piece of advice is to volunteer for new opportunities. When I was early on in my career, I received a performance appraisal that said I was doing as expected. I was average. I don't accept average. I don't operate at average. And I asked my supervisor, I said, I don't understand. I want to exceed expectations. And he said, you have great ideas, but why do you always ask permission to do them? Why don't you just go do them? And I go, I don't have to ask permission? Okay. So if you're new in your career, look for those opportunities where you can go make an improvement, ask permission where you need to, but look for those places where you can go make an improvement, create those proposals, because just because you're new doesn't mean that you don't see opportunities and you don't see things differently. So share those ideas, share your proposals, because you might see something, you know, great that your team is not seeing.
One of my peers, one of his favorite things is that you can turn anything into a question to learn. So if someone asks you a question, you can give them the answer, but immediately on the end, append it with, yeah, I think I answered your question, but do you mind me asking why you asked that question? Like, because it gives you insight to how that person is thinking and discovery, and it builds tighter bonds. And when he told me that, I'm like, that is next level stuff. Like, you can turn any statement into a question just by putting why on the end of it.
Okay. I'm going to use that now. I love that. Yeah.
So, well, what piece of advice would you give to someone who's a little bit further along in their career? Maybe something someone shared with you recently.
For those of us who have been in our careers for quite a while, we have to be really intentional about putting our own personal and professional development at the forefront. We get to this point in our careers where we feel like we've arrived and we've made it. And so therefore we have our certifications, we have our degrees, we've checked all the boxes. And I think that's the wrong approach. We should never have this mentality of we've arrived. It should always be a mentality of we're improving. So for those of us who are more mature in our careers, it's setting the time aside for our own personal development. And that might be something like calling a peer at another company and doing job shadowing with them to see how they operate. Or even something as simple as having a virtual coffee with someone that we've met on LinkedIn just to talk about the challenges that they see. So having, you know, our own personal development at the forefront is still absolutely critical, because sometimes we do need, you know, that check to make sure that we're keeping our skills and perspectives fresh and relevant.
That's great advice. I think an area all of us could improve in is by identifying mentors that will help us see our blind spots. Like, talk to me about how, like, you go about recruiting people to be a mentor to you, or ask for advice from people that you trust, but that will also tell you the truth when they ask you when you ask the difficult questions.
Right. We assume that mentoring has to be this very formal relationship where we've signed an agreement and, you know, we've signed in blood that this is what we're going to do. But often mentoring is really informal. And those people that I consider mentors are people that I've met along the way who maybe operate in a similar business or have a really complementary skill set to what I have. And I just ask, can we meet on a regular basis and just connect? And I have several people with whom I have virtual coffee or in-person coffee about every quarter. And we try to be very intentional about each person gets half the time. So I can say, here's what's going on in my life or in my business. Help me out. What do you think? And then we get to turn the tables for the second half, and the person I'm with gets to share that too. And so that's what I consider mentoring. It's more of like a mutually beneficial relationship and often very informal, and have a wide variety of people that I use for that capacity and to help.
I think when you're trying to build that sense of community with one another and build those bonds, it's also important when someone's sharing something with you, sometimes they don't want you to answer it. They just want to be a place that they can couch what they're going through and recognize that they're not alone in this world. So it's completely okay to say, do you want me to solve, or you just want me to listen? And sometimes the best mentor conversations I've had is just where I'm bearing out my soul and my frustrations and the things that I'm dealing with, and just having someone say, it's going to be okay. Like, you know how to get out of this. That's important.
Yeah. And that's sometimes where it's great to have someone who is not within your own company or even with your own industry. So I have one mentor who does similar types of work in kind of a membership type of structure like I have at CII, but he works in a very different industry with a totally different set of customers. So he's a great person where I can go and just vent and share my complaints and frustrations in a safe spot. And then I have another member or another mentor who works in a very similar type of environment. So he's great to talk about, you know, when I struggle with building customer relationships or something like that, then he can ask me some very tough questions about, you know, what I'm doing and how I can get better.
Great advice. Allison, do you have a favorite book, author, or mentor that you would recommend to our listeners?
One of my go-to books that I return to regularly is John Cotter's Leading Change. I love the books that are extremely practical, that break things down into easy to digest steps. And Cotter's Leading Change is one of those that I go back to over and over again as a basic foundation when I'm working through helping an organization change. So we work on things like the brand platform. So those fundamental steps, it's like kind of like a, you know, go back to basics. Those basic steps are so valuable.
Great book. I have it back on the bookshelf back here. I'm not going to run. I promise you it's there. It's all the way on the end on the second shelf, but it's a great resource guide. And I love that you go back to a book that you've read and you use it as a reference, kind of as a guiding point when you feel like you're getting lost. Like books are maps. If you use them correctly, they can help you not only establish where you are and where you need to be, but also help you find the way to get there as well. I know that magic wands don't exist, but if they did, and you had one that you could use with any group or organization that you're coaching, what would you typically wave your magic wand at first?
Okay, so first I'm going to wave the magic wand at some college football because I need my Sooners to play a little bit better this week.
I think there's a lot of us in the college football world right now that could relate to that as well. I mean, just maybe wave the wand if people not fumble the ball as regularly as they do. But yeah, I can relate.
Don't throw interceptions this week, please. Okay, if I were to wave my magic wand, I would wave it at leadership and magically have them fully grasp change management and understand that change management always is a pretty big effort, and most companies drastically underestimate the change management effort for their projects. Often when I'm doing consulting work, I'm called in after a project has already been started because things aren't going well. And I wish that companies would call in their change management and continuous improvement professionals before they ever start a project, because it's always going to be easier if we start change management at the very beginning before we ever get started. The project is already underway. It's kind of too late. You're already behind. So wave that magic wand and start change management before we actually start a project.
I think a really important piece to say there is by waving that magic wand and bringing in help to undertake the change management, by having a coach, they're not there to do it for you. They're there to help you do it. You can't delegate change management. You can't delegate your relationships. You can't delegate your leadership on a personal level. So just engaging with a consultant doesn't solve the problem on its own. You got to do the heavy work.
No. And it's great because I start with three simple questions for the initiation of change management. So we say, why are we making a change? The fundamental why. And sometimes it's really difficult to answer that question. It's, well, because we need a new software system. Well, why do you need a new software system? What are you trying to accomplish? So why are we making a change? Why now? Most companies are really busy and have a lot of initiatives. So why now are we adding something to the plate? And the why should I care or with them, what's in it for me? So why should I care and why should my people care about whatever we're doing? And you have to really think about, you know, how does this impact all of your employees or your customers? And it's three questions, but it's very profound and impactful and often very difficult to answer them.
Great advice. Allison, you've been a great guest today with us, shared a lot of your experiences. Can you kind of take an opportunity to share with our podcast listeners about your company, what you do, how they can connect with you if they have a question, and the general gist of what makes Allison great at this wonderful thing called Lean and Continuous Improvement?
Yeah, Continuous Improvement International is all about cultivating that passion for continuous improvement and helping make continuous improvement the way business is done. So we do that through the Damn Good membership. It stands for Development, Accountability, and Mentorship. So bringing those three qualities to continuous improvers and process improvers so that they can be really incredible, valuable contributors to their teams. We do that through an annual membership with lots of education, community, and events. And then I also provide continuous improvement and change management consulting to businesses who are more in the service-based, non-manufacturing environment.
No, go ahead.
You can
be on a roll
every time. We have tons of information on our website, continuous-improvement.com. And I also love connecting with new people on LinkedIn. So you can find Continuous Improvement International or me, Allison Greco, on LinkedIn. I tend to be very interactive and love getting to meet people through virtual coffees over Zoom or Teams.
And what I love is that you're very open and approachable about lean and continuous improvement. Obviously, from the fact that you're here right now, you answer emails, you answer LinkedIn requests. Allison, I really appreciate everything you've done for the continuous improvement world and community, and also for sharing your experiences with our guests today. I hope we can have you back again soon.
You are welcome, and I would love that.
Thanks. I want to thank Allison for being a guest on the podcast today. Be sure to go to the show notes page at leanleadershippodcast.com and check out the links on how to connect with Allison if you have a question about what we talked about today. As always, I welcome your feedback on how to improve the podcast. If you like the podcast, make sure to go to podchaser.com/leanleadershippodcast and leave a rating for the podcast and a review. Thank you for listening, and until next time, seek progress over perfection.
Thanks for listening to the Lean Leadership Podcast with Chris Burnham. Get more info, resources, tools, or connect at leanleadershippodcast.com.